right away and the sadhu was meditating. Two more announcements. One is that jisko is lecture ka
thank you to today's Chetna festival. I welcome our esteemed guests and friends who have collected here today. I know this topic sounds very unheard of. You heard of stress management, time management, even lifestyle management. But I'm sure this desire management sounds something very new. You all must be wondering, why should we manage our desires? Desires is meant for enjoying, right? We should enjoy our desires, cherish our desires. Why should we manage our desires? So we see, we can understand this story, this what is desire, by a glimpse of this story which was performed, is that one thing leads to the other. It never ends. Another story I would like to tell, which is very, very, which will give you an idea what desire is. A king announced, he wanted to give charity of land. So he announced in the whole kingdom that anyone who wants land, I'll give you, but you have to run as fast as possible. And the distance that you cover, that much land I will give you, but only on one condition. The distance of land that you cover, you have to come back to the starting point before sunset. So a man started running. And he went running and running and running because he wanted more and more land. And he was going on looking at the sun, when the sun will go down. But every time he thought of coming back, he thought, just little bit more. I will just go little, just 1 feet, 2 feet more. And by the time he decided to come back, he had to run double fast. Because he had to reach before sunset, otherwise all the land would have gone. So he ran so hard, and just few feet away from the end point, he died of exhaustion. So everything was gone. This is human nature. Prabhupada gives a very wonderful example that on the road, if somebody leaves a sack of grains, the little sparrow will come, eat some grains and go away. The cow will come, chew on some grains and then go away. But if the man comes, he'll pick up the whole sack of grain on his back and walk away from there. Is it not true? This is the difference between human beings and animals. God has made enough for everyone's needs, but not for everyone's greed. This is a famous saying, God has made enough for man's needs, but not for man's greed. So we see, desire is something which is making the whole world go round. In fact, the very creation that you see all around you, this beautiful creation, has also come about due to God's desire. All the scriptures, the Bible, the Quran, and all our Vedic scriptures, gives a description that God first desired and then the entire creation was manifested. This is what all the scriptures say. So everything begins with a desire. Everything that we see in this world, human beings have created so many things, so many gadgets, so many new discoveries every day. But how is it all coming? Someone desires. First, the thought or the desire comes in the mind, and then the raw materials, or then a design is made, and then according to the design, the raw materials are collected, and then the creation is manifested. So you see that everything in this world begins with a desire. So as the description is given in the Shastras, how many desires are there? Like if you see in the ocean, when you see the ocean, it is so calm, so quiet. You cannot understand by seeing the ocean that there are so many animal, aquatic or fishes that are there, different types, different species, millions and millions of aquatics are there under the ocean. But from outside you feel the ocean is so calm and serene, isn't it? Similarly, it is described that a human being or a person, when you see from afar, you won't know that there are millions and millions of desires that is going on within. And it's unlimited. A wonderful description, poetic description is given by a poet that if you take a sky, if you take a page which is as big as the sky and you take a pen with the ink of the whole ocean and if you sit to write, just jot down all the desires that come in our mind, then the page will fall short and the ink will get over. In fact, the nib of the pen will also break, but the desires will never end. This is how the unlimited desires have been described. So we see that the desires are unlimited. But it is an irony that the person full of desires is like never peaceful. In the Shastras, a very nice poem is given, a shloka is given. It is in the form of a puzzle. If you hear this puzzle, you will understand. Ashanam na manushyanam kachid ascharya shrinkhala yaya baddha pradhavanti mukta tishtanti panguvat. This is a puzzle which says that a person who is bound with chains is running so fast here and there, whereas a person who is completely free is just relaxed or sitting as if he is a lame person. How is it possible? What is the understanding of this puzzle? How do you understand? That a person who is having unlimited desires actually is bound by all these desires. And to fulfill all these desires, you see that the person is never fulfilled. Is never peaceful. He has to just keep running to fulfill all these desires. Though he is tied with these chains of desire, he can never sit peacefully. He has to always run to fulfill all these desires. Whereas a person who is free from all desires, because he has no desires, he can just sit peacefully and he is calm and quiet. So this is the puzzle. There are three things in a living entity's life. There are three vibes: hunger, thirst, and desire. Hunger and thirst will leave us, but the third wife is very, very chaste. She never leaves the living entity. Till death, this third wife never ever leaves. So that's how desire is. Till the last moment of your life, there will always be some desire or the other. There is one very nice story of Akbar and Birbal. Akbar told Birbal that no, at the time of death, there is no desire left in a human being. There is no chance. If he is facing death, what else the desire can be? But Birbal says, no, it is not true. So he said, I will prove it to you. So there was a old man who was just about to die. He was on his deathbed and Birbal took his niece, who is a very young girl, to see the old man. He took Akbar also along. And as soon as they entered the room, the old man started looking at the young girl. So Birbal looked at Akbar and Akbar understood that really, even at the time of death, this desire never goes. So this is something which is, there's a quote which says, George Bernard Shaw said this, that there are two tragedies of life. One is not to get our heart's desire fulfilled, and the other is to get fulfilled. Because as soon as you get your heart's desire fulfilled, the next one comes. You all must have had this experience. I'm sure not one person in this room can confidently say that I have no desire. That's one guarantee I can give. The latest mobile or the latest fashion, the latest shade of bindi, bangles, and the list is never ending. Don't worry, I have gone through it also. It's completely natural because we are all we can share. We have some very many things in common. So this craving or the longing doesn't go, you know, one desire you fulfill and the thing which follows after that is like, because it just never ends. There's a very famous quote that it's easier to suppress the first desire because after that it becomes more difficult to satisfy all the other desires that follow because it starts with always one thing. So how does the desire, how is the desire produced in the heart? Of us, tell me, what is a desire? Have you ever thought what is a desire? Can anyone tell me what is a desire? Want. Yeah, when you want something. Pardon? Wishes. Okay. Needs. Dreams. They are one word description of desires. Yes, they are. It is all of it. It is all of it. But the main thing is, it is a craving or a longing which is never satisfied. Have you thought of it this way? It is a craving or a longing for something, but it is never satisfied. Because if you observe keenly any desire that you have got, as soon as you get that desire fulfilled, it is not that you get satisfied with that. It's always something more. The famous saying is, dil mange more. So it's always you want something more. It never ends. So how is it produced? How it is created? The desire is created as soon as it comes in contact with the sense object. Our senses are always pulling us in 100 directions. Eyes want to see something good. Your eye has the desire to see something beautiful. Ears want to always hear melodious music. You want to taste something nice, smell something beautiful, touch something soft and nice. And the list is endless. You just feel all these things. The senses pull you in all different directions. The human beings have got 5 senses and each sense is so powerful. You can enjoy with all your senses. But the Shastras give a very wonderful description of with the example of animals. And those animals who have one sense which is very developed and how that one sense actually, you know, pulls them. I'll just read the shloka from Srimad Bhagavatam. Patanga matanga kuranga bhringa meena hata pancham bhureva pancham ekam pramati sa katham nahanyate ya sevate pancham bhureva panchate. That means patanga, matanga, kuranga, bhringa, meena and hata. Meena. There are 5 animals. Patanga means, you have heard of patanga? Patanga. Or a moth. Or a glowworm. The glowworm you see in the rainy season, always, wherever there is fire, you see lots of glowworms all around the fire. And these glowworms, they like to be near the fire. I don't know why, but they just love the fire. The eyes are so attracted to the fire that they go closer and closer and closer, attracted by that bright light, and they are burnt by the fire within seconds. And that way millions and millions of moths, they just get killed in the fire. You see near the tube light sometimes down there is lots of, you know, moths fallen. Just because of their eyes, they are so attracted, pulled towards it, that they meet their death. This is patanga. Then is matanga. Matanga is a Sanskrit name for an elephant. Or a he-elephant. A he-elephant is huge. To catch a he-elephant is very, very difficult. Because it is so powerful. How can you catch an elephant? But the hunters have, they know the weakness. You see a huge elephant, but a small boy will be sitting on top of the elephant and just by kicking him, he controls the elephant where to go, left or right. Isn't it? Just by kicking him at the right point, Why? Because the elephant is very sensitive to touch. He is very attracted to the sense of touch. So if you want to catch an elephant, the hunter keeps a beautiful she-elephant far away. And in the middle he makes a big pit and covers it with grass. So as soon as he sees the she-elephants, he wants to experience that sense of touch. And he'll run towards her. And he falls in the pit. And that is the end of him. Kuranga. Kuranga is a deer. The deer is the fastest animal. So imagine, even if a hunter wants to kill the deer, he can't even aim to hit the arrow because he's so fast. So what does the hunter do? He starts playing a beautiful flute with beautiful music coming. And the deer has a very delicate sense of hearing. And as soon as he hears beautiful music, he immediately stops running. Becomes very calm. And that's the chance the hunter gets, and he shoots the deer. And just because of this sense of hearing, he loses his life. Then is Bhringa. Bhringa means bumblebee. You see, the bumblebee is so powerful, actually it can drill a hole into a tree's trunk also. It has got that power. But it is so attracted to the lotus flower, to smell the lotus flower, to go and smell the nectar within the lotus flower, that it goes on and sits on the lotus flower and starts smelling the lotus flower and enjoying the nectar. But in the evening, the lotus closes. But by that time, the bumblebee is so intoxicated with the smell of the lotus flower that he doesn't understand that he should escape. And the next day morning when the lotus opens, the bumblebee is dead, found dead. So we see this shloka is so descriptive that one sense, just one sense object, actually led to their death of all these animals. So the shloka says, so imagine that species of life who is having all the five senses fully developed and who is trying to enjoy with all the five senses, how can such a person ever escape death? Is it ever possible? And who is this animal which has all the five senses developed? Human beings, we human beings. So we are trying to enjoy this world with all our senses which are completely developed. So how sense gratification cannot lead to our complete destruction? Isn't it logical? So wonderful description is given. So we see that each one of us, human beings, is always looking for more and more sense enjoyment with all our senses. And this ultimately leads to more and more unhappiness. We see in today's world that there is so much technological advancement. There are so many, things which you can use for our enjoyment. But still we see that the number of people who are committing suicide, or the number of stress, amount of stress and mental, problems that are coming in people is going on increasing day by day. So we have an understanding that it has a direct correlation, because more the enjoyment, the more the amenities that we have, less is our peace of mind. We become more and more disturbed and distressed. So happiness is, everybody is craving for happiness, running for happiness, but no one knows how to get that happiness. Everybody thinks that we can get that happiness only through sense enjoyment. So a king asked a sage, please tell me, what is happiness? Please tell me what is happiness, but only in one word. Describe happiness only in one word. And the sage said, butterfly. So the king was completely confused. Butterfly? what has butterfly got to do with happiness? So he tried to think, what is the understanding? What, how can happiness be, you know, butterfly? So one day he was sitting in the garden and suddenly he saw a butterfly. And the butterfly came near him and sat just close to him. And as soon as he went to pick up the butterfly, catch the butterfly, it flew immediately. And he went to another leaf. The king went behind him. And like that, he just went all over the garden running after the butterfly. He was just going on running whole day almost. He was just trying to catch the, and as soon as he came close to the butterfly ran away. And that way he was exhausted. And finally he sat down in one place. And just that time the butterfly came and sat on his lap. So then he realized, actually it's true. Happiness is just like this butterfly. We are running after so many sensual objects or sense gratification. For what? To get happiness. We are running from here to there, foaming at the mouth, trying to get happiness in this world. But you just feel it's just within your reach and immediately it's gone. Then again you keep running. And when it's least expected, it comes. So we see that life is nothing but trying to satisfy our senses and get more and more happiness as sense enjoyment. It's amazing if you hear the statistics that I have collected, that how much the people of India each day, how many things they are buying or how many things they are collecting just for their sense enjoyment. So this funny statistics that I found out, like in a day they sell 57.6 lakhs of mineral water bottles. 57.6 lakhs. At one point of time there was no mineral water. Nowadays it's like a luxury to carry a bottle, you know, mineral water. You feel as if you're, you know, an NRI carrying a mineral water bottle. And then you look down upon people who get down from the train and drink from the platform. You know, like, so it's like very stylish to have mineral water. At one time it was natural, drink water from anywhere, you know, it's free. Nowadays even after some time even air will be bottled, you know. In some boxes we'll have to go and smell some, breathe in some fresh oxygen. So it's like just a matter of time. Then in a day, 9,872 flat screen televisions are sold and 72,000 jeans and trousers. My gosh. No wonder everybody looks the same. All the girls wear the same kind of jeans. So there is like every day so many jeans are being sold. Then there is 86 lakhs beer bottles. My God. And 141 lakh soaps. Imagine soaps, so many soaps per day is being sold. Body is like, you know, the source of all enjoyment. And like for women, body is everything. There are different kinds of soap. If you are dark, if you use the fairness soap. And if you are too fair, then the tanning soap. Then I don't know what different types of soaps are there. 1.04 crores movie tickets. In a movie theater, all your senses are, you know, satisfied. No? With your eyes, you are seeing all the different scenes. With your nose, you are smelling all the air freshener that they put in the air conditioned theater. Ears, you are hearing all the dhinchak music. So all the senses are almost satisfied in the movie theater. So no wonder. 26.02 crore cigarettes are sold in a day, and that too, that is with the statutory warning which has become compulsory now. They saw that the sales of cigarette is not coming down at all, even after putting the warning on the box. So they thought of putting the warning on each cigarette. So each cigarette should have the statutory warning. In one country they thought like that. But still, you know, there was no change in the people. So they thought they will, you know, make it compulsory that every advertisement of a cigarette, if it comes, you should put that, flash that statutory warning. So one smart company, what they thought, they made an ad in such a way that one cool looking guy takes out a cigarette, lights it, and at that time the whole statutory warning comes flashing. And then this guy takes a puff and says, who cares? So this is the, you know, every time they find a loophole, there's no way we can control the desires. It's very, very difficult. So how do we manage the desires? How do we manage these desires? That's what we have come, all of you have come here for, to manage, to learn how to manage the desires. One thing is that we all have understood that these desires are unlimited, and it's not that it's going to end one fine day. You wake up in the morning and you say, oh, I have no desire at all. Like the Buddhists say, no desire, no desire. Make your mind blank, shunya, shunya, shunya. It's not possible like that. It's not so easy. That one fine day you wake up in the morning and you're having not a single desire in your mind. The desires are going to be there. We have to learn how to manage the desires. So I'll explain with a very nice example. You have your best friend, and you have your best friend, you have gifted a very nice imported sandals, and wearing that imported sandals, your friend goes out to the market or to the mall, and suddenly a huge fat girl comes and dashes into her, your friend, and stamps her toe, and the toe starts bleeding. And immediately your friend says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to the fat girl, and the fat girl says, yeah, it's okay. Wait a minute. Why is she telling him her sorry? She's the one who should tell sorry for stamping the toe, isn't it? So this girl is saying, I'm sorry. And he's saying, then she realizes, my gosh, why did I say sorry to her? Something is wrong with me. Better I go to the psychiatrist and find out. So the psychiatrist, she goes to the psychiatrist, takes counseling, and the psychiatrist says, no problem, you just have inferiority complex, that's all. You just have inferiority complex, so that's why you said sorry. Say, oh, thank God, now I know why I said sorry to her. And she comes out of the psychiatrist's shop, and again she's walking on the road, and again she's stamped on the toe. And this time she's very happy. Now I know why I'm sorry. And again she smiles and says, I'm sorry. Now I know why I'm saying sorry. It's just that I have inferiority complex. I have diagnosed my problem. I know that I've got inferiority complex. This is one way of looking at it. That we all know we have desires, but then we have a passive reaction towards our desires. You know your problem. Okay, I have diagnosed my problem that I have lots of desires and there's no problem. Everyone has desires, so what? But just by knowing that you have a problem is not the cure of the problem, isn't it? And you have a passive reaction and you just give in to all your desires. This is one way of managing desires. This is one reaction. Which most of us must be experiencing that. We just have a passive reaction. And think that it's okay. I have this problem. So it's okay. I can continue with this problem of having desires. Now second scenario. Your friend goes out wearing the beautiful sandals and a huge hefty girl stamps her toe and she gives back to that big girl and say, dikhta nahi hai kya? And this big fat girl gets angry and slaps her and there is a big fight. This is an aggressive reaction. Another scenario is, you see your desires coming and you aggressively try to tackle your desires. This is the aggressive reaction. And the third scenario is, your friend is walking and this girl stamps the toe and the friend looks at her with a very firm look as if telling her, do you know what you have done? And at that time, the big hefty girl says, oh, sorry. And walks away. So what is this kind of reaction? This is assertive reaction. This is neither passive nor aggressive. But this is a assertive reaction. Understanding that yes, desires are coming. But you do not either give in to your desires or aggressively try to enjoy the desires. But be very firm and understand that I have to understand what is a good desire and what is a bad desire. So we see that every action, every desire can be tackled in these three different ways. So in conclusion, we understand that desire is, as we described, is like the chaste wife who is not going to ever leave us. So we have to learn how to manage the desires. And also we understand that as we try to fulfill all our desires, all the more we become more and more unhappy. And why? Why is it like that? Have you thought why do we feel dissatisfied with life? Even though we have so much, still we become dissatisfied. Because all the desires that we are trying to fulfill is for our own sense gratification. It's for our own self. It's to fulfill our own selfish desire. We try to do so many things in this world. And we see that ultimately we are left completely dissatisfied. The Shastras give such a wonderful example that if you want the whole tree to be nourished, what will you do? Will you water each part of the plant, the fruit, the leaf, each twig, each branch? If you just water the root of the tree, everything is automatically nourished. Isn't it? So we see that each one of us wants happiness. But all the time we are just running after these material things which will for our own selfish desires. And that's why we can never become satisfied. But if we want real satisfaction, have you ever experienced when do you feel really happy? Have you thought of when do you feel really satisfied, happy feeling? Can anyone tell when do you feel happy? Other than something which you have done for yourself. When you do something for others? Can you share something? Helped someone, yes. You get that inner warm feeling, na? Yeah, you feel something nice. I felt like that once. When I actually gave a 50 rupee note to a beggar. It's a big, big amount. But I felt happy. So many experiences, you know. And you remember them, you know. But it's no use telling them. I just told this one. But you won't feel happy if you tell 100 people that I did this, I did that, you know. So this is not the way to get up. When do you feel really happy? When you help someone. When you do something for someone else. Other than yourself, then you get that warm feeling, isn't it? Then you become really happy. It's a wonderful story I read once about two patients in the hospital. Both were terminally ill. I think most of you must have read it on the net. Both were terminally ill and they were both confined to their beds. But one patient was very nearer to the window and the other one was away from the window. So person who was away from the window always used to be thinking, you know, I wish I could be shifted there so that I could look outside the window. And the one who was near the window, he would peep out and look, and every day he would tell this person what he's seeing outside the window and describe the beautiful scenery outside. And every day he would tell all the nice things and tell stories about people and how they looked and what they did. and how the scenery was, how it looked in summer, how it looked in winter. And every time this person used to keep hearing and used to think, when will I get that place near the window? And half the time he was miserable. And this person who was near the window, he was so happy always. Every day he had something to look forward to and something nice to tell. And one day in the night, this person who was near the window was gasping for breath. And he was just, you know, needed help urgently. But this person saw, the second person saw that he is needing help. He could have rang the bell and called. But he didn't call, thinking that if he dies, then I'll get the place near the window. And this person died. And the next day, he said, I want to get shifted there. And he went and got shifted the next day. And eagerly he looked out of the window. There was a blank wall. There was just a blank wall. There was nothing of all the things, that beautiful things that he used to tell him. So from this story, we understand that person who was near the window, he had nothing in life, no enjoyment at all. But what was his source of enjoyment or happiness? He looked so happy always. Why? He was so happy only because he could give the happiness to others. He was giving happiness to the other patient. And because of that, he was every day, every morning, he looked so happy and blissful. Whereas this person was so miserable. Why? Because he just wanted for his own enjoyment. He didn't want to give anything. So we understand by this story that happiness doesn't come from things. It doesn't come from something which you own for your own enjoyment. Real happiness comes when you do something for others. So if you just fulfill your own selfish desires, that's not going to make you happy. How many ever imported things or whatever things, beautiful things in this world you may get, but that will not give you happiness. But real happiness you'll give if you do something for someone else, and that too selflessly. So what to speak if that person for whom you are doing everything is the supreme personality of Godhead himself? Think about that. If every desire that you have, instead of trying to enjoy it for your own selfish enjoyment, if you do everything just for the pleasure of that person, that supreme person, Lord Krishna, what will be the benefit? What kind of happiness it will be? That happiness will be eternal. It will not be temporary. Isn't it? We have so many desires for our own self. But just imagine if all those desires, you just do it for the pleasure of somebody else, and that somebody else is no one else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Then how much eternal happiness you will get. So we see that desire can be material, or that same desire can become spiritual. All our acharyas have said that desires, all the material desires are like snakes. They are like snakes of death dancing on our heads. But the fire, just like a forest fire, when there is a forest fire, all the snakes are destroyed. Similarly, as soon as we engage in devotional service or bhakti, it is like a raging forest fire which can destroy all the snakes of desire, material desires. So all our desires can be offered to the Supreme Lord in His service, and all those desires can be changed to spiritual desires. So this is a practical way how in this life, living in this world, in your day-to-day life, routine life that you are leading, it's a science, it's a beautiful science, a nice formula which our acharyas have given, that just each and every desire, whatever you may have, everything, whatever desire you may have, instead of trying to enjoy that desire for your own personal sense gratification, you use that desire in the service of Krishna. and sky is the limit. There is no end. How you can use each and every desire that it comes in our heart in the service of the Lord. Anything you may say, anything anyone says, like, oh, I love to eat good foodstuffs. Somebody likes to eat. Of course, you can fulfill that desire, but just eat nice Krishna prasad. Any wonderful vegetarian food, whatever you feel like eating, just offer it to the Lord and eat it. What does offering to the Lord mean? That means you're not trying to enjoy that rasgulla for your own sense gratification. First you offer it to the Lord and then enjoy the rasgulla. Then immediately that material desire is transformed into a spiritual desire. As simple as that. You like to sing. So instead of singing for getting more and more fan following, you can sing for the pleasure of the Lord. As we heard, beautiful kirtan. You like to dance? Everyone likes to dance, right? Young people, girls especially, we love to dance. So instead of fulfilling that desire to dance by going to discos where, I don't know what happens in the disco. I have never been by Krishna's mercy, but that desire can be fulfilled. You know, you can dance without all the complications or the dirty smoke, dirty air, with a nice, beautiful temple. You know, you have such a big place, you can dance before the Lord and fulfill all your desires for dancing. So like that, each and everything, any activity that you can do in your life, everything can be used in Krishna's service. Every desire can be satisfied completely. There's nothing that you can enjoy that you miss in the material world, that you cannot enjoy in the service of Krishna. Everything you can enjoy 100 times more without any, you know, consequences, bad consequences. So this is the way how practically in our day-to-day life, every activity that we do, we can serve Krishna by dovetailing. And that is the example we see. We have such beautiful example of our dear founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada. His only goal of life, in his whole life, he had only one desire, and that is to fulfill the instruction of his spiritual master. And just imagine, desire is so strong, as we discussed in the beginning, desire is the first step to achieving anything in life. Anything that you want, you have to first desire. So Srila Prabhupada just had this desire in his heart to fulfill this instruction of his guru, to spread this mission all over the world. And he went to America at the age of 70, and in such cold weather, he had no money, no friends. He was all alone in the city of New York. And he met one person in a park, and they were both sitting on a bench. And Srila Prabhupada told him, was talking to him and telling him that there is a worldwide movement. There are temples, 108 temples. There are farm communities. There are so many restaurants, Govinda restaurants. And everything is there. But only time is separating us. When nothing was there. He said this in the beginning of the movement, when nothing was there. And he was telling all this to that man, that I want to start a movement with all these things. And that was just his desire, and everything manifested. Today we see, if we are sitting in this beautiful temple with AC and comfortably sitting, it's only because of this one desire which was in the seed form and which has manifested into this beautiful temple. In fact, many years back in 1970s, Srila Prabhupada came to Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan and he told his disciple Shyam Sundar Prabhu in the direction, he pointed towards this temple, this direction, and he said, this area is so nice, there should be a temple here. And after about 30-40 years, this temple has manifested. So we see how desire is so powerful, how a spiritual desire is so powerful, and especially a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada, when they express these spiritual desires, Krishna has to fulfill it. So from this we understand that how a desire is so powerful. So each one of us has this choice to make today. That do I want to get lost in this mad race for enjoyment, pleasure, selfish pleasure, running after this mirage of happiness in this material world, or we want to choose to get eternal happiness in the service of Lord Krishna by dovetailing all our desires, whatever desires we have, in the service of the Lord. This choice we have today. So I beg all of you that desire is something which we can never remove from our hearts artificially. So at least we can try to begin our spiritual life by taking baby steps of dovetailing all our little desires in the service of the Lord and offer all our desires at the lotus of feet of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath and beg for His mercy. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So if there's any